Good evening, one and all. Yes, Tuesday, March, and here we are with another book and a chat. I know, where's January and February gone? They disappeared pretty quick. But as I said, you know, the older you get, it's like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you get through it. And that's true with life, believe me. I can't work out where January and February went. But it's now March, and I am here, and so is my guest. Now, one of the things we obviously see on the show a lot in what 1600 shows we've done on now, plus a bit more, that must be coming up to 1700, is, you know, fiction is stranger than fact, or fact is stranger than fiction, because with everything that's going on, you know, people have been writing about things like that for a while. Well, my guest, he is using his own experience to write a pretty brilliant book, this is, and it's the first hopefully of a series, but we'll ask him about that. And it covers a bit like what we got going on now with the world, because, you know, I always wondered, well, my fear was that if we had another war of sorts, it would be the internet and the hackers that would control it, but it's the sanctions and the oils and everything like that. And it seems people haven't learnt their lesson from Napoleon or the German invasion of Russia, and the fact of, you know, how we can control it and keeping the fuel and the food and everything going on. But we'll find out a bit more, because my guest over in England, of course, so yes, it's midnight for him nearly over there, but I'm sorry to keep you up. My guest today, Mike Harrison, the one and only, I forgot to say that, the one and only Mike Harrison. Hi Mike, how are you doing?
I'm very good, Barry. I'm very good. And thank you so much for having me on A Book and a Chat. It's nice to be here.
My pleasure, Mike. My pleasure. A Cambridge lawyer, so the Cambridge version of Morse almost, I guess, are you?
you could say that. My hair has not gone grey yet, though.
You're lucky. You've got hair. my wife's into Morse at the moment. She's going through the whole of, well, she's gone through Morse. She's onto the follow-up, the Sergeant series now. So, yeah, she's into that. So every time I sort of say, what are you watching? Oh, I've been watching Morse. I'll be like, okay. When we go to England next, I want to go to Oxford. I want to say, fine, yeah, we'll go to Oxford. See all this stuff. But, you're...
I'm a bit disappointed, because, I mean, if your only sort of perception of Oxford is the Morse series, you might be a bit disappointed to find that it's not actually that violent.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's not so common in Oxford.
It's like who want to live in Midsummer? You know, they have murders every other day there. What's going on? with your experience, you've basically travelled all around the world to various places, and you've used that experience and the knowledge you've gained to write this book, which, as I say, hopefully is the first of a series called The Pale Tiger.
Yes, indeed. As you said, I've been lucky enough to travel around the world, and my job has taken me in all sorts of places. And so this book is set partly in London, but partly in Washington, partly in New York, and partly in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong is a place that, you know, I've got to know quite well over the years. And I think as cities go, it's almost like a real character on its own, because it's got this sort of strange and desperate energy. It's almost like a city that can't believe it actually got created, can't believe it actually exists, clinging to this jungle hillside in the middle of the tropics.
Right. I mean, it changed when, you know, it became a part of China from part of Brittany, a part of the Commonwealth sort of thing. But it is, it's almost like one great big bank, I get the impression of. You know, it's everything's there in Hong Kong. I want to go to Hong Kong. I want to go for the seven-a-side rugby. So the sevens there, which I've heard is meant to be absolutely amazing. But one day, you never know. But in your book, The Pale Tiger, you sort of go into this whole thing with the finance and everything like that, which a lot of it, you know, obviously is based around Hong Kong.
Yeah, I could give you a little pressy of the story.
Yes, please do.
If your viewers would be interested.
Yeah.
Okay, so, so basically, the story starts with a collision in the disputed South China Sea between a Chinese and an American warship in the middle of a raging storm. And immediately people are asking questions.
Right.
Is this really an accident?
Yeah.
Or is it the prelude to Operation Pale Tiger, which is a fabled Chinese plot to bring America to its knees? So into this story, we throw our two main characters. So one is Emma Wilson, and she's a British MI6 agent, and she's sent to Hong Kong. And her job there is to trail one of the principals at a London hedge fund called Crater Capital,
mm-hmm.
which is rumored to have high-level links to the Chinese government. And then back in London, our second principal character is a detective, Anne Perry, and she's called to investigate a strange death at this same hedge fund, Crater Capital. And she soon realizes that this death was no accident. The action then switches to Washington. And here the corridors of power are buzzing with the discovery of a huge stock of deadly opoids.
At
a warehouse with apparent links to Crater Capital, the hedge fund.
Yeah.
And the CIA and the State Department join the dots. So if Crater really is a front for the Chinese, you know, what does this discovery mean? Is this, in fact, what Operation Pale Tiger looks like? China's revenge on America, perhaps for the opium wars of all those years ago.
Right.
So the Joint Chiefs in Washington demand a show, and they send another carrier strike group, a U.S. carrier strike group, to join the 7th Fleet in the South China Sea. So Emma in Hong Kong and Anne in London are pressing hard, determined to discover the truth behind Crater Capital. And as they're drawn deeper into this world of dirty money and corrupt agents and ruthless assassins, the hunters become the hunted.
Right.
Emma and Anne find themselves fighting for their lives. So as the story begins to draw to a conclusion or to a finale, we have a huge U.S. battle fleet steaming towards the Taiwan Strait and certain war. And Emma and Anne now find themselves thrown together in London, in the heart of Crater Capital, the hedge funds, beneath the rain-swept streets of London. So what are the dark secrets that are lying there? I mean, is it really the Chinese who are behind Operation Pale Tiger? Or are there other forces at work?
Right.
To provoke a war?
People listening sort of think, well, hang on, isn't that what's going on now? Isn't that the fact that they found all these hedge funds have got Russian money in them? Isn't the fact that even the Russian people are saying that their army's suffering because the Russian billionaires have sort of siphoned off money for their yachts in Monte Carlo and stuff like that. And then you've got the ginger idiot, who I still can't understand why he's not in jail yet, saying, well, what we should do is paint Chinese logos on our bombers and bomb Russia and then just let China and Russia get on with it. This is not fiction. This is going on. This whole thing with the hedge fund, this whole thing with, this person against this, and if we do this, what's going to happen? Is it the various armies and the military of the two countries, or is it somebody pulling the strings behind the scene? And people know
everything is connected to everything.
It's crazy.
And I think all conflicts, in the present and in the future, I guess, are going to be fought, not just on the battlefield, or perhaps not even principally on the battlefield,
right,
but, through the markets, through back channel intelligence, through manipulation of the commodity markets.
Mm.
Human ingenuity, we've all discovered lots of new and inventive ways to sort of hurt our opponents, haven't we?
Oh, crikey, yeah. I mean, this is what I've been an IT person until I retired all my life, basically all my life, my working life. And you know this stuff goes on with the IT stuff. I mean, just say that something happened, and I know they've got lots of data centers and stuff linked, but to the cloud, something happened to the cloud, the world would stop. Basically, the world would stop. There'd be no money markets. There'd be no phones. There'd be no you know, people would lose everything. Basically, and it's not far-fetched when you think about it. Yeah, what might happen? And in your book, as I say, fact stranger than fiction, because what you've got there, we see in a lot of parts of it actually going on right at this moment with everything that's going on. You said you got these, you got Emma and you got Anne. Was it, they're very strong women. I've not, there's been obviously an increase in the number of strong women that I've seen, you know, come through in sort of, you know, fiction books and stuff like that. Was it, what made you pick to have these, the, you know, female, you know, heroes, shall I say?
Well, I think it was partly because I wanted to sort of, have something that was perhaps a little different from your normal stereotyped, male London hard-bitten copper,
right.
You know, and your sort of not quite James Bondish, but you know, often the secret agents who have all the really rough stuff to do are males.
Right.
So I thought it'd be fun to invent these two characters, and also to slightly contrast, you know, their own experience during the story, because you've got one of them, Emma, she's a trained spy, so you know she's used to doing this kind of work. But Anne Perry, who's a London detective, she used to be a school teacher. She's in her mid 40s.
Oh wow! So
to be thrown
right.
into the middle of all this is a complete shock to her. She's completely unprepared. I mean, she's almost like the your next door neighbour,
right?
You know, the kind of person you'd sort of bump into at a West London book club. Not the kind of person you'd normally find, you know, fighting with corrupt hedge funds, ruthless hired killers. She's not really in her comfort zone at all. So I thought two slightly contrasting characters.
Indeed, and interestingly, I mean, I said that you've got a lot of female. Female main characters in books, but I never had, I think you're the first one where there's been the two main characters are female. There might have been one lady, I think, who'd written a book from the female side, but it's great the fact you do it. And as you say, the contrast between Emma and Anne, you know, Anne being like your next door neighbour, like the Smiths, wasn't it, the film? Where the people lived next door and people didn't know they're secret agents. But in this case, this is a person living next door. What actually made you, what actually brought you to write this, The Pale Tiger?
Well, I remember a few years ago, I saw an item on the news. And there was, in real life, there was a near collision in the South China Sea.
Right, yeah, I remember,
an American and a Chinese warship.
Yep.
And I just thought, okay, one of these days, there really will be a collision. Yep. And then, you know, what happens next? So I thought, yeah, you could make a story about that.
Mm. Indeed. And, you know, again, you know, this is why people say, well, why isn't there a no-fly zone? At the moment over the Ukraine, because it means that it could develop into America could develop in, you know, have to cover it, and the next thing we know it'll be World War III. It's not far-fetched. It's there. We know it's there. We've seen it in the last month about it and everything like that. And to my mind, your book is preempting what is going on right now, and people, I'm sure, if read it, will sort of put that when they're reading it, it's in the back of their mind.
Well, I mean, I think that's true in the sense of The Pale Tiger is really a story of a confrontation that very quickly spins out of control, and not because either side wants it to spin out of control, but because both sides have their suspicions as to what they think the other side might be planning to do. And if they see signs that reinforce their own suspicions, then it's all too easy to think, yes, I know what's happening, they're doing this, and therefore we're going to do that. And of course, the other side, making exactly the same calculation, they're doing this. And if we do this, they do that, and then we need to do this. And that is the scary thing.
Yeah, indeed. And to my mind, I realise this, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there realise this, is that these money people, in your case, the crater people, they are the people that pull the strings. It's not the diplomats, it's not the the military and stuff like that, but it's the money people who pull the strings on the world. And I mean, people think, oh, well, crikey, this isn't really going on, this would never happen, something like crater capital, they wouldn't have all this sort of stuff going on. I'm pretty sure, and I'm sure from your experience and the fact you've written it, this does go on.
Absolutely, it goes on. And you see, the advantage that they have, Barry, of course, is that they're not in the public spotlight.
Yep.
Politicians and the military, everything they do is in plain sight. But it's the reverse for the hedge fund industry. They do everything behind closed doors.
Hmm.
And you only see, we only see as the public, we only see what they want us to see. That's the big difference.
Right, and of course, was it Theodora? I think it is. This whole business, the computer systems, which do all the stuff in the background. I know it goes on. And anybody in IT will tell you half of this stuff goes on. But it's people just don't comprehend how much one little press of a button can do. I mean, you see it on the stock exchange. I think it was a few years ago. Somebody pressed the wrong button and something, so many billion got written off as shares or something like that.
Yes. Well, and also, I mean, it's hot, as you know, it's a very hot topic. Theodora, which is this super powerful computer in the book,
yep.
I mean, it's a nod really to the development of artificial intelligence, AI, which,
yep.
Well, you would know this, Barry, but, we're not too far away, maybe just a few years away from a machine that's going to be able to perform any intellectual function that a human being can, except they're going to do it faster, better. And if you combine that with all the information all the systems have about each and every one of us,
oh, crikey, yes.
Very quickly, you've got a machine which can outthink us, in every department. And the question then will be, if you create something with that kind of cognitive power, will we ever catch up with it?
Huh.
That is a big.
We're never going to catch up. I mean, and one of the things that I think, with all the business with Trump over here, that's been, is the fact that, they can pull everything you've texted or said on the phone. People don't realise that. This is, and it's there. It's there for years and years and years, for decades, for what have you. These people, this was texted to this and this. You think, really? These Big Brother is that much, and people are sort of always worried about it, but it's going on. And I think, with this whole business with the what's going on at the moment with the false reporting and everything like that, it's people manipulating. It's people sort of. People believe what they want to believe these days. There's nothing out there that says, the good old BBC in the 40s, that was it. That was what we were having and everything other. These days, people just report what they want to report. That's going to affect. It's another form of manipulation. Like everything else. And in your book, in The Pale Tiger, you have these hedge funds. Now, they go to extreme measures. Do you think that would really happen? Because I do.
Well, given the eye-watering amounts of money at stake, I think you have to assume that anything is possible. And you have this toxic mix in certain corners of the financial markets, where you have huge amounts of money, you have highly unscrupulous individuals, you have very little transparency. The potential for misbehavior, financial misbehavior, and any other kind of criminal misbehavior is immense. And I think you have to assume that a lot of what we see in the papers, you know, reported as, it could be anything from misadventure to undefined criminal gang activity. But I think, you know, it's right to assume that behind some of these things, you have the sort of the dark hand of big money and the financial market.
Would you call it the beast? Is that what you call it?
The beast. Yeah, well, that's, yeah. I mean, I've worked for 30 years in the global financial market. So that's, yeah, I think I can say I have seen the beast.
Right. I mean, people think, is this really going, is this person, what's he talking about, is this going on? Yes. If you just have to look around you and read and see what's going on, it is there. It is happening. The pale tiger. Yes, it could happen. And as you say, from the idea that when the ships, I remember, and you know, when they had that collision and everything like that, and everybody was sort of suddenly, oh my goodness, what's this going to turn into? You've done this much. You can have a follow-up book on this.
Yes, well, I've just finished my next book.
Oh, great.
It's called 2 Degrees Fahrenheit. And my agent is just organizing the publication of it as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two main characters are back. So we've got...
Oh, good.
Anne Perry and Emma Wilson are going to be doing their stuff in a completely new plot. And this is set in the world of cryogenics.
Okay.
Which doesn't actually exist yet, but again, we're probably not too far away.
Not far off.
Obviously, the idea that you can actually deep freeze a human being, keeping them alive, just alive, but alive, for however long it takes before you find the cure or work out a way in which you can save them from the medical certain death that they faced before they were put into antibiosis or before they were frozen.
Right.
So I think this technology, probably around the corner, I think it's interesting also because it throws up a lot of sort of moral, social, even sort of political questions. Particularly, you know, in the context of what we've just been through.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you think, for example, that the next major global health alert could be something like a real plague.
Right.
Like a real Black Death scale medieval plague.
Mm-hmm.
Then this kind of technology suddenly comes into really sharp focus. You know, is it right that just because you have money and therefore access to a new technology like this, that you can sort of almost buy yourself a way out the other side?
Right.
Whilst the rest of us have to just endure and suffer whatever Mother Nature's going to throw at us.
Indeed.
It does raise a lot of, I think, very pertinent questions. But the book is not about that technology. I mean, it is like the Pale Tiger. It's another story of international intrigue, of the sinister influence of hedge funds and global markets behind the scenes, and the idea that although, you know, politicians are the ones who make the speeches and
exactly
it's not necessarily the politicians who are really pulling the strings.
No, it's not. And I think people are actually sort of beginning to sort of realise that now with what's been going on. You know, they can mouth all the stuff they want, but when it comes down to it, it's the people behind the scenes that goes on. Interesting enough, what you said, you know, about this whole cloning DNA and all this sort of stuff. You know, with Russia itself, that they've been working on, you know, bringing back the mammoth. You know, people say, what? Well, just look at, was it Dolly the Sheep? you know, and that sort of stuff that we've already knew. And I think it was last week before last, was it the perpetual energy thing that the sun does and everything? They managed to get something lasting 5 seconds. 5 seconds is a heck of a lot.
Yeah, nuclear fusion.
Yeah, fusion. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if they can do it for 5 seconds, that's amazing, because it we're not far off getting perpetual energy. And just think of the difference then, with no worry, not the oil, not the sort of electric, not the power things. You've got perpetual energy, and we're that close. And it's in England as well, they did it. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, as and when they do crack nuclear fusion, which is totally safe, as you probably know, it just replicates the chemical reactions in the sun.
Yeah.
The whole global landscape changes.
I mean, indeed.
Dependence on carbon fuels goes. It really just takes us into a whole new kind of future. Arguably, one that we should be looking forward to, if it takes away one of the major pressure points and causes of contention and geopolitical friction like we're seeing today. A lot of what you see is it's really people trying to use the weapon of energy.
Yep.
As one of the means to achieve their geopolitical end.
Indeed. Well, I tell you, Mike, it's been terrific chatting to you. Time has whizzed by, as it always does when you've got an interesting guest like yourself on the show. But what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you and have you tell everybody where they can find more about you and about Pale Tiger and everything else. So over to you.
That's very kind, Barry, and thanks again for having me on and booking the chat. I very much enjoy talking to you.
Well, I'm just sorry it's so late for you. But
well, it's all relative.
You're right.
Okay, thanks again. I have, there's a website you can go to, which is www.thepaletiger.com. And on the website, you'll see links to where you can buy the book. You can buy it from Amazon, you can buy it from the publisher, and there's various other ways you can buy it. And the website also gives you a little bit more info about the background of the book, the background of the story, some of the major themes that I try and talk about there, and why I draw attention to them, and why I think they're relevant and important in terms of what's actually going on in the world today.
Okay, well,
I hope any of you who get around to getting a copy of The Pale Tiger and reading it, I hope you all really enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to getting the sequel, 2 Degrees Fahrenheit, published very soon.
Well, Mike, thank you so much, and perhaps when the next book comes out, you'll come back and chat with us again.
I'd be delighted to, Barry. No, thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. How about that? Mike Harrison, great book, The Pale Tiger. And as you read it and as you heard us, just think what's going on. Just think, read what you read and look at this. It is the truth. It is how the world is these days. People don't want to look perhaps sometimes, but perhaps you have to. Anyway, great book, The Pale Tiger by Mike Harrison. Well, that's the end of the show for today. I'll be back tomorrow with another guest, but until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...